And speaking of Greenside Up, it is now time for Greenside Up right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. And joining us in studio this morning is James Scoover and David Scronson. Guys, good morning. How are you doing today?
Good morning.
It's good to see you guys this morning. And we got a couple of topics to discuss. But before we get to those, James, you do have a couple of workshops that you'd like to talk about before we get started this morning.
Yes. And so one of my topics is actually about marketing because we have a grain marketing workshop. We're calling it Winning the Grain Game. It'll be on February 23rd from 9:30 to 2:30 at the Neosho County Fairgrounds in Erie. And that we're going to talk about basically developing a marketing plan, putting stuff on the futures, calls, puts, options, hedging, and all of that. And, you know, right now is a vitally important time for producers to be looking at this because the markets are all over the place, which is kind of what I'm going to talk about. So, Corn Marketing Workshop, February 23rd from 9:30 to 2:30. Dave, and you can probably talk about the livestock keeping better than I can.
Yeah, and we'll also have a livestock record keeping workshop coming up the beginning of March. It's going to be an evening workshop held on Zoom, so you can attend from your home. And the livestock record keeping one, we'll have Dr. Jamie Lynn Farney joining us to talk about different aspects of record keeping and different record keeping systems you can use. Record keeping is very important for a livestock operation, and when it comes to record keeping, there's a lot of different options out there, whether it's Excel, there's even apps you can use on your phone. So Dr. Jamie Lynn and Wendy Powell will be discussing those different options and the importance of record keeping and types of records you should keep.
All right, sounds good.
We'll also have right now, there's a soil health. There's a bunch of webinars going on. And so right now there's a soil health webinar, and it's basically every Monday evening at 7 o'clock. So if you're interested in soil health, I think we're going to talk about the biome, the soil biome, the microbial actions, and, you know, the development of organic matter, a whole bunch of different topics, kind of the science of stuff. But we're also going to talk about Tree ID. The Kansas Forest Service is putting on a Tree ID. Apparently, this was really popular last year, and so they brought it back again. And so Kim and she's going to go through all these things. I'm actually going to take this class because I'm not very good at identifying trees, especially when there's no leaves on them. Once it gets to the bark, it's very hard to tell.
You're just like, well, they all look the same.
Yes, they really do. So February the 11th and the 18th, and that will be in the evening as well. And also, there's a corn school that will also be online, and that is tomorrow or the 11th. And so, you know, every year they have a corn school. Usually we have it at the Parsons, but this year, of course, it went virtual. So, for corn producers, of course, they're going to talk about this same ordeal, the markets, the fertility, the disease management, and everything that goes along with production.
All right, so quite a few webinars and workshops going on. Good to see people, you guys, you know, like you said, just getting out there and staying busy. Well, we're going to go ahead and start with you, James, today, and you're going to be talking about markets and top dressing wheat, and let's go ahead and get started with markets. So I guess we're wanting to know, what is going on with the grain markets right now?
Well, right now, the commodity markets, they've gone up considerably in the last past couple of months, and pretty much every farmer is going to know this. And this is kind of really due to a number of different market factors. The corn and soybeans, their change is largely due from the China has increased the imports. And they're actually set to be the number one importer of U.S. corn. Last year, they were like 25th. Generally, we think of China, we think of soybeans importer, but this time they're actually importing a lot of corn as well. And so the our ending old crop storage actually might be limited. And so that does not mean we're going to run out of corn and soybeans. That's probably never going to happen. Right. Not in this country anyway. but it actually has meant that it's been oversold. And so our ending stocks is going to be a lot less, which is going to put, you know, pressure within the system. And that's part of the reason why the futures have gone up so much. Also, Argentina and some other countries, they sort of reduced their exports. Basically, they're trying to protect their domestic supplies, largely because of the coronavirus. And so these market factors have made corn and soybeans gone up a lot, especially corn. It has increased considerably, over the last past couple of months. Wheat is not as tied to China. Oddly enough, China is like the world producer of wheat, but they don't import it. They make it all themselves. It's a massive quantity of wheat. But still, it's gone up some well. There's some correlation between wheat and corn that they put together.
Another thing I did want to ask you is, does the U.S. dollar have an effect on markets?
It does. And so this really kind of has an effect on pretty much all export markets, really. But commodity markets are dependent upon this as well, like very directly. And it's largely because the weaker dollar makes exports comparatively cheaper. And so just a logical function there. But also the Chinese dollar, whatever that is, the yen or whatever that's called, the value has also slightly increased as well. And so because their dollar is stronger, our dollar is weaker, it makes that export a lot easier. And there's a lot of other countries, their dollar is getting stronger in comparison to ours too. So it's, you know, it doesn't seem like a good thing, but actually when it comes to exports, it kind of works out pretty well. There you go.
All right. Well, so what can farmers and ranchers do to take advantage of the markets?
Well, right now they need to be selling the grain on the futures, or at least thinking about it, making their marketing plans. And they often say, you know, sell a fourth before planting, sell a fourth at planting, sell a fourth during growing, and sell a fourth when you harvest.
Right.
And
so, kind of keep kind of rolling the whole time.
Yes. Kind of protect your interest there. And there's all sorts of options with that, with calls, puts, and hedging. Basically, various premiums to protect your profits. And so, really, you know, if a lot of this stuff is confusing, I understand because I don't always get it, and I've listened to a lot of these marketing seminars before. So that's kind of what I'm hoping for the Grain Marketing Workshop, is to really explain to people the exact function of how to get into the market. And so I know that I'm going to learn a lot from this workshop. So I'm hoping that other people will too, because the futures are confusing. And so there's a lot of terminology there that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you'll just sit there and be like, okay. Seminar that you're doing, that's definitely going to kind of break it down to help explain people exactly how it works, to make it a little bit easier to understand.
Yes.
All right, so that's again going on with markets, and we're going to go ahead and move on to top dressing wheat. And when do farmers need to think about top dressing their wheat?
Yes, and so kind of this is the time of year we start to think about top dressing wheat. A lot of it probably already has been top dressed. Well, some of it anyway. But it's more to do with weather than a certain calendar date, because we can't predict when we're going to have any dry soil here in Southeast Kansas, right, if it ever happens in spring.
And it seems like it'll rain a lot, and then you'll go weeks without, and then all of a sudden there'll be another deluge. You just kind of never know when you're going to have that dry and wet time.
Yes, and it takes forever for soil to dry here in the winter because we have no infiltration. So it just sticks around and turns to mud. Usually it's sometime in February that will have at least some point. Now, here in just a few days, we're going to have some nice days, and then it's going to get to frozen, which is risky, what I'm trying to say. And so the biggest uptake happens right after joining, but we need nitrogen in soil before that happens. And so too early, and the loss, I mean, if you put it on too early, you might get some losses from denitrification. And so you'll lose a certain percentage of that. It doesn't mean you're going to lose all of it, but I mean, some years you can lose 30 to 40% of your nitrogen before that final uptake. And so there are some methods that you can use, basically mixing your urea. There's actually some urea that's coated, and so it's delayed release. And so mixing your regular urea with your delayed release kind of can help some of those situations, but basically, you don't want to put it on too early, otherwise you're going to lose it.
Right, and it can be a kind of a guessing game sometimes as well. And, you know, it looks like we're going to have some cold weather coming up, especially this weekend, and the frozen ground. We could have some frozen ground early next week. Let us know about that.
And so, like I was trying to say before, it's risky. And it could be possible to spread urea on frozen ground. but there's a lot of danger with it. Basically, you do not want to spread fertilizer on top of snow. If you have frozen ground and then snow gets on top of it, do not spread your fertilizer on top of that, because as soon as that snow melts, you have no idea where your urea is going to end up. Basically in the Gulf of Mexico. That's where it's going to end up. And so you've really got to be looking at the forecast. And also there's a risk with, let's say that snow that we get here in a few days, it melts, which is kind of looking like what it's going to do. And then the ground freezes. Well, the ground is going to be completely saturated. If we put the urea on and then it snows on top of that, when that snow melts, it also might drag off some urea, or at least shuffle it in a way around the field, and so it's not distributed very evenly.
Right, it'll be just kind of haywire all over the place.
Exactly. And so I have no prediction of whether we're going to effectively be able to spread urea on the frozen ground here in a few days. By extension terminology, the answer is no. But in all practicality, possibly. And so I know a lot of it's going to go on, is the thing. That's the reason why I'm mentioning this, is because I know there's a lot of producers are looking at those single-digit temperatures, and they've got plans to put it on there. Because if they don't do it now, you know, they might not get it on before jointing. If it doesn't dry out, it's going to take a while.
Right. And the next couple of days are supposed to be like 60 and 50, and I don't know how much of a difference that's going to make, because obviously the ground temperature changes more than the air temperature. Mm-hmm. But these next couple of days, they should be okay, should they not?
Yes. The next couple of days, because the ground's too wet to spray anything right now.
Right.
But that warmness of the ground right now should melt that snow that we get this weekend before it gets to the frozen. It's more about what we do with the frozen soil if there's going to be a snow later on. That's the thing that I'm really worried about.
And you were talking about, you know, you need nitrogen in the soil. What are the nitrogen rates?
And so you generally, we're talking about 50 to 60 pounds of nitrogen. It kind of all depends on how much you put in the fall pre-plant. Of course, you're going to need some more for soft wheat as well. There are some people around here that actually do grazing, and then they harvest the wheat. And of course, you're going to have to add probably 30 pounds more if you're doing a grazing and then harvest situation. And so there's a lot of factors. Ideally speaking, you should probably take a soil test beforehand. Most guys don't, and it's kind of already too late to do that anyway if you're going to do that soon. So generally, 50 to 60 pounds, or units is what they call it, is common, I would say.
And should you do anything else besides just nitrogen?
You could. And so, you know, wheat, it can benefit, like all grasses, really. It can benefit from chloride and sulfur, the other two mobile nutrients. Sulfur deficiency is really common, actually, in wheat. We're looking at the field, it's all yellow and splotchy, and we think that it's nitrogen, but actually it's sulfur deficiency. And so it's a little bit less common around here, but sulfur deficiency is quite possible. And so it really, you have to go out there and take a look at the individual plants to see the difference between the two. And so chloride, however, you won't see a deficiency in chloride. It's very aloof. It's involved, though, in disease suppression and, you know, a lot of enzymes, actually. And so that chloride, if you have a history of putting potash on your soil, which is common in Southeast Kansas, you've applied enough chloride, you don't need to worry about it. Some of that will be retained within the soil. However, sulfur, that's something that we actually kind of have to add, because nothing is coming in from the atmosphere anymore.
Right.
And so the sulfur rate's probably around 15 pounds would be more than enough. So, you know, if you're thinking about it, if there's a way to put in sulfur that's easy, it might be not a bad thing. It's really not all that expensive to put on a few pounds of sulfur, too.
All right. Well, again, a lot of great information there. And James, if anybody has a question about any of these things that you've been talking about today, or maybe they have another question about something else, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, if they're interested in a workshop, or, you know, they're thinking about top dressing wheat, they're not sure what to do there, you can give me a call at 620-724-8233.
All right, and we're going to go to Dave and Scrunch real quick. And Dave, just kind of preview what you're going to be talking about in the second part of our show today.
Yeah, coming up after the break, I'll be talking about bird feeders and feeding and attracting birds to your backyard and some considerations during the winter.
All right, and we'll also talk about those workshops again one more time, just in case you missed them. We're going to go ahead and take a break, and when we come back, we will have Greenside up on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. And good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Greenside up here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Joining us in studio this morning is James Coover and David Scrantz. And welcome back, guys.
Yeah, good morning.
Well, let's go ahead before we get started with you, David. For those maybe just tuning in, you guys have a couple of workshops that you're going to be having here in the upcoming days and weeks.
Yeah, I'll start it off. And on February 23rd, we're going to have the corn marketing workshop or winning the grain game. That'll be February 23rd from 9:30 to 2:30 at the Neosho County Fairgrounds. So for all you producers marketing grain, that's going to be a very important one. I didn't mention it before, actually, but we're going to have a mushroom cultivating workshop. And so last year, we kind of learned how to make shiitake and oyster mushrooms. And this year, we're going to have another set of workshops, except a little bit farther north in Iola and Erie. And so if you're interested in making mushrooms and doing some mushrooms in your own backyard, in your own kitchen, this is going to be a really fun workshop. So give the Erie Extension Office a call if you're interested in growing some mushrooms.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and, David, let's go ahead and get to your topic for the day. And today you're talking about bird feeders. And first thing we do want to ask you, how can you attract birds to your backyard?
Yeah, well, of course, you'll probably see birds coming and going through your backyard. But to really attract them to your backyard and get them to stick around where you're able to watch them, a good way to bring them closer to your home is, of course, to feed them. The type of birds you attract will depend on the type of feed you put out, the type of feeder you use, and of course the location of the feeder and feed. There are a couple different types of feeders. The most common are platform feeders, tube feeders, suet feeders, and hanging feeders. And of course you can use any variation or combination of these feeders. So you could choose a ground level platform feeder with a raised platform feeder, or choose a high or low hanging feeder. And then, of course, you can locate them in different places, as well as surrounding cover seems to have as much to do with usage of the feeder by birds as does the feeder type itself.
All right, and providing feed for, you know, and like you said, different types of feed and feeders, but also, birds, they need water as well. So what about providing a source of water for the birds?
Yes, so just like any other animal, water along with food is two of their main needs, and water is another important consideration for backyard habitats. In the winter, sources of open water may be scarce, of course, because they freeze because of the colder temperature, so a bird bath with a bird bath heater may attract as many birds as the feed in your feeders to the yard. And of course, if you're going to have a bird bath with a heater, locate it where it will be convenient to fill up and also close to electrical outlet so you can plug in that heater. Right.
So that water doesn't freeze and then the bird's trying to figure out why can't I drink this?
Because yes, it's exactly. Solid. So we'll make sure that's always a source of water
all right,
for them.
Because it's probably not as big of a deal as it is for us because, we love to drink cold water. We don't like to drink hot water, but it's not as big of a deal for birds. They just need it to keep themselves
yes,
alive pretty
they
much.
Just need a source of water. And I mean, some animals, larger animals like horses, or I've also seen goats do it sometimes, they're able to break ice in their mm-hmm. water if they kind of get impatient waiting for you to break the ice in the morning. But birds, of course, they're not able to break the ice.
Right. So it's especially if it gets frozen solid. Because again, like you said, horses can kind of do it, but that's also a bigger thing of water, which doesn't freeze as hard as opposed to like a little thing of water, which would freeze pretty easily and pretty hard and that a bird can't peck at.
Exactly. In those bigger water buckets or water troughs for livestock, usually it's just the top inch or two that gets frozen mm-hmm. where the water in a bird bath, that will usually freeze solid because
right.
it's not that deep of water.
Right, exactly. It's just the amount of water doesn't take as long to freeze. With it being winter here in Kansas, are bird feeders as important right now?
Yeah, they are. So even though it's been nice and warm the past couple of days, and I know today is supposed to be a high of 57, and we've been enjoying this warmer weather recently in southeast Kansas, it still is winter. And of course, like we were talking about in the first half of the show, colder weather is right around the corner and possibly snow. So it is just as important to have feed available for birds this time of year, because during winter weather, food sources are limited to birds. There's not as many natural sources of feed available because, of course, the plants are dormant. So seeds and fruit and different things that birds could traditionally forage during warmer months, those aren't available for them. So it's harder for them to find natural food sources. So having those bird feeders available for them during this part of the year is very important. And the birds also get to know that, hey, there's a bird feeder in this yard, we can go there, and they start to rely on it a little bit.
Right. They basically kind of start a, you know, kind of flock into it, and they know to keep coming back because you're going to keep providing them food. They're going to be like, hey, we'll just keep coming back pretty much.
Yeah, exactly.
So talking about bird seeds, though, what do birds like the best? What was the best kind of feed to give to birds?
Yeah, there are, of course, many mixes of bird seed available depending on what type of species you are most interested in attracting to the backyard. But there's one kind of seed that has a universal appeal to most birds, and that is black oil sunflower seeds. So if you are new to bird feeding, make sure there is a high percentage of black oil sunflower seeds in your mix, because these are sought after by many different types of bird species. White millet is another seed that's preferred by many birds, especially dark-eyed juncos, sparrows, and the red-winged blackbird. And of course, as you become more interested in bird feeding, you may want to use more than one feeder and type of feed to attract different species of birds. And then also, again, make sure water is available for them as well. And if you're interested in maybe attracting a specific type of bird to your yard, or you would like more information about what types of birds prefer what seeds, you can, of course, contact me at the extension office if you have a specific question, and we would be happy to give you that information. And we also have a list on our website of bird species that are in each county here in the Wildcat District that Chuck Audie, who's an extension agent with Erie County and is a very avid bird watcher, he put together those lists for each of the counties that you can check out on our website as well.
Right. And, you know, we always talk here about, you know, birds or ducks or whatever, kind of going south for the winter. That doesn't happen with a lot of birds, though. Is that correct? Some of them still kind of hang around the area.
Yeah, most of the smaller birds, like the sparrows, they stick around the area. They don't really migrate. Like, geese are very well known for migrating.
they're like, we're out of here, it's cold.
Yeah, and even though we consider Kansas pretty cold in the winter, some geese actually, when they migrate south, they come to Kansas
from the further north,
right? More from like Canada.
where it's really cold. But like I said, kind of smaller birds, they don't make that trip, because that would be even a long trip for them to begin with, because even though they can fly, it's not that fast. So
like cardinals and finches and all that, don't they migrate as well?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Those are the names. Yeah. They weren't coming to me at the moment. All I could think of was the more Orioles, common, like little sparrows. Know.
A lot of them, except for the really ugly ones, and American robins, I think, are the other ones that don't really migrate. But basically, the colorful birds migrate, and the
the colorful ones, like, hey, no, we're out, guys. We'll be back when it warms up a little bit. And then I guess most of the cardinals, when it starts warming up, they migrate to St. Louis. So
yeah. I have a question.
I know that's a horrible joke, but
is there any tips to keep cats away from your bird feeder? So my neighborhood is completely filled with cats. I always thought about putting out a bird feeder.
Right.
But it just basically being feeding them to the slaughter. I mean, there are so many cats around my neighborhood.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have any good tips to keep cats away because the thing with cats is they're really good at climbing.
Right.
Yeah. So it's hard to put.
So they'll be sitting there waiting up in the tree. And just I'm just going to wait for this next bird to come by.
I know. I've looked up to keep squirrels because squirrels are the other animals that they don't go after the birds, but of course they really like the bird seed.
Mm-hmm.
So to keep squirrels out of the bird feeders, it's recommended that you can put the feeder up on a metal post where the squirrel can't climb
grip.
It. Yeah,
right.
So that might kind of work out for cats as well. Yeah. Or some other people have also said with squirrels, you can put like a metal sheeting that's loose around whatever post or wherever you have your bird feeder hanging on. That way, again, the squirrel can't grip to climb up to the feeder to eat the bird seed.
The problem is the birds, they grab the seeds out of it and they throw it on
right.
the ground
and
then
they
fly
to
onto the ground.
Yeah, so then the cat still kind of has an all-you-can-eat buffet.
I don't know, like some sort of platform underneath the bird feeder and then a cone underneath. I have no idea. There's got to be a way.
You can get really creative. And I have seen bird feeders where it's the bird feeder and then it does have a little platform, but I haven't seen them with a very big platform. It's usually a rectangle platform, maybe about the size of a piece of paper, and then the bird feeder is smaller in the middle.
Yeah, and those and the bad thing, you know, the bad thing, like you're saying, cats are great climbers, but they're also great jumpers as well. So they can clear big big gaps where they're trying to get to. So and like James said, if you got a neighborhood full of cats, man, they're waiting for that bird seed, and they're also waiting for that bird that may be feeding at the at the bird feeder. All right. Well, guys, again, lots of great information, and we love seeing you guys every week, and we will see you guys again same time next week again. Before we get out of here, if anybody, again, would like to contact you guys, how can they do that?
They can reach me by calling the Independence office. That number is 620-331-2690.
They can give me hold of me at the Girard office or the Erie office. The number is 620-724-8233. Or if you're the Mushroom Workshop, call the Erie office or the Marketing Workshop, the 620-244-3826.
All right, guys. Well, again, thank you so much for coming in. We really do appreciate it. And we will have you guys on again here in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. We're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to start Open Line. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.